Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Vacha. Yadro Yata Shitita Lodaranaya Bibra. Krodin Tanum Sakala Jagna Mayim Anantaha. Antaram Aharnava Upagatam Adidaityam. Tam Dam Strayadrim Iva Vraja Daro Dadara. Bhavacha. Lord Brahma said, Yatra, at that time, when Udyata attempted Shititala, the planet Earth, Udaranaya, for the matter of lifting, Vibrat assumed Krodim, pastimes. Tanum, form, sakala, total, yajna, mayim, all-inclusive sacrifices, anantaha, the unlimited, antar, within the universe, maha-arnave, the Garbhada, the great Garbha ocean. Upagatam, having arrived at. Adi, the first. Daityam, demon. Tam, him. Damstraya, by the tusk. Adrim, the flying mountains. Iva, like. Rajadara, the controller of the thunderbolts. Adara, pierced. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma said, when the unlimitedly powerful Lord assumed the form of a boar as a pastime, just to lift the planet Earth, which was drowned in the great ocean of the universe called the Garbhaduck, the first demon Hiranyaksha appeared, and the Lord pierced him with his tusk. Somehow or another, the translation left out about the flying mountains, just like Indra cut off the flying mountains with his thunderbolt. The wings of the flying mountains with his thunderbolt. Since the beginning of creation, the demons and the demigods, or the Vaishnavas, are always the two classes of living beings to dominate the planets of the universes. Lord Brahma is the first demigod, and Hiranyaksha is the first demon in this universe. Only under certain conditions do the planets float as weightless balls in the air. And as soon as these conditions are disturbed, planets may fall down in the Garbhaduck ocean, which covers half the universe. The other half is a spherical dome within which the innumerable planetary systems exist. Floating of the planets in the weightless air is due to the inner constitution of the globes, and the modernized drilling of the earth to exploit oil from within is a sort of disturbance by the modern demons that can result in a greatly harmful reaction to the floating condition of the earth. Well, we didn't have enough troubles. start feeling like you're moving, or the earth is moving really quickly, probably going the wrong direction. A similar disturbance was created formerly by the demons headed by Hiranyaksha, the great exploiter of the gold rush. And the earth was detached from its weightless condition and fell down into the Garbhadak ocean. The Lord is maintainer of the whole creation of the material world, therefore assumed the gigantic form of a boar with a proportionate snout and picked up the earth from within the water of the Garbhadak. Sri Jayadeva Goswami, the great Vaishnava poet, sang as follows. Pasati darshana sikare darane tava lagna shishini kalanka kalevaraninya magna keshavadrita shukara rupa jaya jagadisha hare. O Keshava, Lord, Supreme Lord, who have assumed the form of a boar, O Lord, the planet Earth rested on your tusks, and it appeared like the moon engraved with spots. Such is the symptoms of an incarnation of the Lord. The incarnation of the Lord is not the concocted idea of fanciful men created an incarnation out of imagination. The incarnation of the Lord appears under certain extraordinary circumstances like the above mentioned occasion. And the incarnation performs a task which is not even imaginable by the tiny brain of mankind. The modern creators of the many cheap incarnations may take note of the factual incarnation of God as the gigantic boar with a very suitable snout to carry the planet Earth. When the Lord appeared to pick up the earth, the demon of the name, Hiranyaksha, tried to create a disturbance. And the methodological functions of the Lord, and therefore he was killed by being pierced by the Lord's tusk. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the demon Hiranyaksha was killed by the hand of the Lord. Therefore his version is that after being killed by the hand of the Lord, the demon was pierced by the tusk. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms his version. Brahmavacha yatro yatro yata shiti talo dharanaya vibrat krodim tanum sakala jagnamayim anandaha antar maharnava upaga upagatam adidaityam tam strayatri iva rajadaro dhara. Lord Brahma said, when the unlimitedly powerful Lord assumed the form of a boar as a pastime, just to lift the planet Earth, which was drowned in the great ocean of the universe called the Garbhadak, the first demon Hiranyaksha appeared, and the Lord pierced him with his tusk. Now is the beginning of a chapter of incarnations. And of course, they're extraordinary. There may be points in this particular purport which are more or less adopted, I imagine, to suit our particular understanding of reality. Because in different places in the Bhagavatam, sometimes that reality is expressed differently. For instance, in most places, Prabhupada said we never went to the moon. But you can also find places in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada states that, you know, the scientists have to go into the moon, etc., etc. So Prabhupada was not particularly interested in trying to be consistent in our conception of consistency. What's consistent is this explanation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And sometimes he adopts things in order to fit a particular circumstance. So in one lecture, Prabhupada stated that, well, in the original blue Bhagavad Gita, which you'll also find in other parts, I was just reading yesterday, I guess it was in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that 640 million people died. That was actually Srimad Bhagavatam. 640 million people died during the war of the Kurukshetra battle. So how many people live in Australia? 20 million? So imagine having a fight and everyone in Australia was dead. And that was just a small part of the battlefield. Pretty inconceivable. So one time Prabhupada said, and in one lecture, there is 6,400,000 people die in the battlefield Kurukshetra. And some devotee said, Prabhupada, you said in the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, there were 640 million people who died in the battlefield Kurukshetra. So Prabhupada laughed and said, yeah, give or take a few zeros here and there. That's what I'm thinking. These details Prabhupada was not so much concerned about. Just like in the Krishna book, we find that King Ugrasena had something like 13 quadrillion personal bodyguards. So 13 quadrillion personal bodyguards, Sariputta one time, he tried to figure out how much room, if there were 13 trillion personal bodyguards, according to the current estimation of the space on this Earth planet, how much room would each bodyguard have? And he figured out that they'd be stacked up three on each on top of each other. So we accept that there are actually 13 trillion personal bodyguards. Either we think that King Ugrasena was quite paranoid and security problem. Or that somehow or another, maybe there was some other way, some other realm of understanding it that may be not within our realm of perception. Just like it says that, and the Krishna's family members had 1 billion members living in Dwarka. So it must have been a pretty crowded city. And at the same time, Shukadeva Goswami says he had 32 million personal tutors for the family members. So that must have been a lot of children running around. If you had 32 million tutors for them. If you're looking for a job, you know where to apply. So these things were throughout the Bhagavatam. But we're not really so much interested in every single detail. Of course, in modern society, people are very much interested in the details, and if they don't find the details consistent, immediately their faith diminishes, and they say there must be some mistake. Indeed, in one of the places I preach, in Holland, the devotees are all the time reading Prabhupada's books, but some of them are reading them the idea of trying to figure out what's wrong with them. The inconsistencies. If you give a class in Holland, specifically in Amsterdam, then the devotees will always ask questions. What says here in Bhagavatam it says this, and here in Bhagavatam it says this. How is it possible? Maybe the Bhagavatam is wrong. But that's not why the Bhagavatam is written. That's not Prabhupada's purpose. It's meant to point out a certain point, and sometimes the exact details are slightly changed. It may be that the Bhagavatam is written according to different millenniums and different yugas or in different lifetimes of Brahma. Because in one part of the Bhagavatam we find Brahma shaking Krishna's hand in this Bhagavatam, this canto. Because he's a friend, it says, of Krishna. In another part, we find Brahma and the lotus flower, our Brahma, who recites the Brahma Samhita, he realizes that he's a maidservant to Krishna. So how is that possible? How can he be a maidservant? And then he becomes a cowherd boy, or he was a cowherd, you know, did he change his gender or something in the middle of his spiritual gender? Now, there's so many Brahmas speaking. There's so we're in one universe, And our little tiny Brahma only has four heads. And there are Brahmas, according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, who have 10 million heads. So there are so many Brahmas, and they're coming and going, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, just like flashes of lightning in the sky. Our whole duration of life, as I said the last time, Brahma lives for 311 trillion, 40 billion years. And that makes one of his seconds to be equal to 100,000 approximately of our years. But his life, his complete life, is considered to be just a flash of lightning, of light in the cosmic sky. So the Bhagavatam is not interested in being historically consistent and being, you know, not only consistent, but systematic, chronological. It's giving examples in different times in order that we can get some good example for a particular philosophical point or spiritual point. Similarly, here we find the earth described as a globe floating in space, because that's the way generally we think of the earth, as a globe floating in space, and we don't really consider it can be connected to anywhere else. But in other places, which aren't like in conversations or whatever, Prabhupada may mention that actually what sunk into the Garbhadak ocean was not just this tiny earth. It was a whole Bhumandala sunk into the ocean. If one little tiny planet like the earth sank into the ocean, I don't think Krishna would have to incarnate to pick it up. It wouldn't be very exciting. But the whole Bhumandala, which is quite a bigger, and according to the conception of the Bhumandala, we're in a very small part of Bhumandala called Jambudvip, which has different varshas, and we're in Bhardvarsha. And Bhardvarsha has some connection with the salt ocean, and the salt ocean surrounds the whole Jambudvip. And the length of Jambudvip and the salt ocean are equal. Circumference, or at least the diameter of Jambudvip and the diameter of the salt ocean that surrounds it are equal. And then you have Plakshadvip and all different dweeps. And you go out and they go in concentric circles, goes around and around, they become hundreds of millions of miles in diameter. And that's called Bhumandala. So the 4 billion miles of the circumference of the diameter of the universe practically is covered by the Bhumandala, and that's sunk into the Garbhadak ocean, which would make quite a big splash. Therefore, the boar, he came, Sukra avatar, he came and lifted up the whole Bhumandala. But if Prabhupada had to explain that here in this particular purport, it probably would have taken more than the current purport just to explain that. And people wouldn't understand it, just like we probably can't understand the rest of the purport either. So why is the Bhagavatam written? Is it meant to confuse us? Is it meant for stories so that we can tell them to children before they go to sleep? Don't worry, child. The boar avatar will protect you. If you fall into the swimming pool, he'll come and lift you up. That's his job, lifting up things. If we stuck with the Bhagavad Gita, that would probably be best for us, in one sense, in terms of the basic philosophy, because just to understand that we're not this body, Prabhupada once said, for the people in general, it'll take 500 years before they can understand that they're not their body. So that's what we're experiencing directly. That's our direct perception, that the body is changing, and that we ourselves are not changing, and that we're the observer within the body. That we're experiencing at every moment. But we're so confused, we can't even understand that very clearly. And then Krishna goes on in the second chapter, for instance, he explains things that relatively are quite simple, like don't be attached to what you're doing. Even the impersonalists know that. That if you're hankering or you're lamenting, you're in anxiety about the results, you're going to suffer. And when you add that together with the fact that we're not this body and that we're a soul and nothing's going to happen to us, no matter what happens to the body or the mind or our conception of life, it doesn't really matter. Nothing will really happen to us as a soul. The best thing that can happen to us is that we could wake up from the current state of unconsciousness that we're already in. That would be the best thing. But besides that, nothing can really affect the soul. So knowing that, we shouldn't be in anxiety. Why should we be in anxiety what happens to this body? Because it's really not happening to us. We may be in anxiety to try to spread the Sankirtan movement, and therefore we want the best possible facility or the best possible circumstances in which to spread the movement, one of which would be not to be so much distracted by this gross and subtle bodies, and therefore we try to make arrangements so we're not so distracted and we can wholeheartedly try to distribute Krishna consciousness. But besides that, in the course of time, this body will not last forever. Therefore, why should we be disturbed? What's exactly going to happen to it? Because we know what's going to happen to it. I don't have to say. But I will say anyhow. Just to remind everyone. We're going to grow old. The body is going to grow old. The body will become more and more uncomfortable, probably. And it's going to die. It's not a threat. It's a fact. If someone came into a lecture at a university and said, I think you're going to grow old, you're going to become diseased, and you're going to die. Then everyone would look at the speaker and go, wow. Where is he at? So that we already know, that's what's within our realm of perception. And intellectually we can accept that because it's within our realm of experience. And other things Krishna says, like dhyayato, vishyam, pumsam, sangasteshu, pujayate. That when we look around at the objects of the senses, specifically trying to figure out which object we want to enjoy, or which object may be an obstacle for my enjoyment, then we develop lust and greed and anger. That we can all experience. That's what the whole society is more or less currently based upon. Trying to find some attractive advertisement to capture the meditation of people so they become lusty and they become greedy. They run after those things. And before they become angry at the people who sold it to them, who quickly leave time, town, or go bankrupt or something, take their funds somewhere else. In any case, people are just, that's what they're doing. What are all these stores with all the windows and all the dresses and shoes and pants and shirts and cars? What is it? Are they just trying to show how nice they made creations? No. They're trying to attract people's attention so they become attracted to those things. They become lusty for them. Of course, who become lusty for a shirt? I need that shirt. Oh, I can't live without that shirt. No, because the shirt is all advertised in order to attract, usually, you know, to facilitate our eating, sleeping, and a heavy emphasis on mating and defending. According to what shirt you have, eating and sleeping won't make a big difference. But mating and defending, they say, will make a big difference. So people are, the modern society is all meant to attract people, stimulate their appetite from material existence and become fixed in this meditation. So this is what Bhagavad Gita said 5,000 years ago when Krishna spoke it. So it's just as true now as it was then. So Bhagavad Gita is an ocean of information about the reality that we're experiencing right now. Of course, we read Bhagavad Gita and sometimes we find it boring, saying the same thing over and over again. You're not that body, you're actually a soul. How boring. I already heard that 5,000 times already. Don't contemplate the objects of senses. That's terrible. What is there to do? This is really getting depressing, Bhagavad Gita. So then we read Bhagavad Gita as a matter of habit, sometimes a matter of duty. If you don't read Bhagavad Gita, you're going to fall into Maya. Of course, we're already in Maya, so we don't have to worry about falling into Maya. The idea is don't read Bhagavad Gita, because if you don't read it, you'll fall into Maya. No, the idea is to help us get out of Maya. So we read through Bhagavad Gita, and then it gets more and more difficult as it goes on. You know, there's another world which is manifest and non-manifest, beyond manifestation and non-manifestation. That world is supreme and eternal. Going there, no one comes back. And there, Krishna is a coward. So it gets more difficult. I mean, we may officially be devotees, but, you know, none of us have probably directly seen Krishna as a coward boy. We've seen the deities, but as far as Krishna's original form, which is perceivable through meditation, like Brahma saw him after meditation, we haven't seen him. We're accepting on faith that there is a Krishna, and on the basis of the knowledge we have about Bhagavad Gita, we're trying to render some service to Krishna with some faith that maybe one day some realizations will come upon us and we'll be able to accept what's being said, at least in the Bhagavad Gita. We'll be able to understand a little bit more deeply in the Bhagavad Gita. So then we have classes in the morning in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is like in a whole different realm of experience. It's meant for Paramahamsas. And most of us are not top like swans. Actually, Hamsa means duck. We may be top ducks. But we're not top swans. And therefore, it becomes a whole realm of faith testing. Of course, we gloss over that because we don't really take it seriously, because it has no meaning to our life. Whether Lord Bohr exists or not, it doesn't make any difference to us, because we're not going to meet him, we don't owe him any money, and he's not going to give us a donation. We have no connection, seemingly, with Lord Bohr. And even if he came by, the universe is so big that no one could actually even see him. So that's one thing. And then whether the earth fell into the Garbhodak ocean because of drilling, well, we just hope it doesn't happen again. I mean, the weather forecast is good and we can go to the beach or something, so hopefully the earth doesn't fall into the ocean again while we're at the beach. So most of it doesn't seem to have any relevance to us, except, you know, here it says the demons and the devotees, they're constantly, there's two classes of people, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Dvavimo purusho loke, no, actually, Dvau Buddha Sargo Loke Smin Daivam Asrim Evacha Daivam Vishrak Satprota Asrim Parthameshinu. That there are two classes of people. Some of them are called the divine, and some of them are called the demons. Because this word demon, even amongst the devotees sometimes have become kind of like conditioned, oh, we can't call them demons, they'll become upset. They probably called people demons, but he could do that, but we can't. We'll use the word asura, because they don't understand what it means. That way we'll be polite, we won't upset anyone, and everyone will like us, they'll like the Hare Krishna movement, and everything will be alright. We'll be respectable. But Krishna says, is in the universe at least, we don't find Indra trying to become respected by the demons. When Bali Maharaj comes, Indra doesn't say, you know, it's all right, Bali, it's all right, we're all the same, you know. Don't worry. We have our demoniac tendencies too. Let's live in peace with each other. No, they fight with each other. And one side sometimes wins, and the other sometimes wins. And when Krishna comes, he sides with the demigods. He doesn't say, well, the demigods, demons, they're all the same. It's boring siding with those demigods all the time. Let me side with the demons this time. Get a little variety in the pastime. No, when Krishna comes, he sides with the demigods. And he kills the demons. And that's when the impetus is to become a demigod rather than a demon, because you get Krishna's mercy. And it's not like the demigods and the demons are all the same, and the only difference is that the demigods wear dhotis and saris and the demons don't. No, Krishna goes further into the explanation of the difference between a demigod and a demon. For instance, in the 16th chapter, Abhayam Sattvasam Shudira Jnana Yoga Vyavyasthiti Danam Dhamma Sajagnascha Swadayatapa Arjavam. There he says that the persons who are beginning to become demigods or asuras, who are beginning to become faithful to the Supreme Person, first of all, they hear from Krishna about reality and they meditate on reality. They meditate upon Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. That's called swadaya. They actually find out about their real self as being a soul and about the difference between themselves and the external energy. And then on that basis, they begin to perform sacrifice to Vishnu, Jagavai Vishnu. They give in charity to the cause of spreading the Sankirtan movement. And they control their mind and senses by engaging them in devotional service or in following the Vedas. We don't find the demons, for instance, in that mood. Yes, let me understand what it says in Bhagavad Gita. Try it out a little bit. I've done so many things. No, just like sometimes, as I said, the devotees think, oh, let my children go to the regular karmi schools. Of course, sometimes we have to allow that because we have no other means of doing it. We have no other place to put the children. But we think it's all right. They'll learn so many things. And sometimes I've heard the excuse, well, let our children go to the Gurukul because they can learn so many things. And in the future, if they want to become devotees, when they grow up, they can become devotees. They can take that choice. Of course, the asuras, or the demons, depending on which you want to hear, they never say, let us send our children to New Govardhan to be trained up as devotees. And in the future, if they want to become demons, that will be their free choice. They're not so foolish as we are. No, there's a science of becoming a devotee. And there's a science beginning with hearing from the beginning of life. Prahlad Maharaj says, Komar Acharat Pragyo Dharman Bhagavati Iha. To hear about reality from the beginning of life, like we're not this body, we should contemplate Krishna rather than the objects of the senses, we should learn how to perform utilize our energies and sacrifice for Vishnu, specifically by chanting Hare Krishna in this age, and that we should control our mind and senses and utilize them in devotional service rather than for gross and subtle sense gratification. And we should give in charity, we should utilize our energies in the service of the Sankirtan movement. Then we'll become tolerant and we'll be able to perform tapasya. So if we can perform tapasya, go a little bit beyond our present comfort zone, then we can actually come to the platform of realization. Krishna will give us abhayam, fearlessness, because we realize we're not this body. we're not the mind, we're eternal souls, will gain bliss by purity. We won't be afflicted by lust, anger, greed, delusion, forgetfulness, bewilderment. We'll actually be situated in pure feeling of Krishna consciousness. And we'll have complete understanding of how everyone and everything is related to Krishna. It just won't be an idea, it'll be an experience 24 hours a day. So that's the objective of becoming faithful. So here at least it mentions that there are two classes of people, and there is a difference, because Krishna will go over in Bhagavad Gita in the 16th chapter, sometimes not the most favorite chapter. If you're giving a public program, it's probably not the best chapter to explain. Just like usually in public programs, we don't say, Svavid Rahusra Karara Samstuta Purusha Parshu. Hogs, camels, dogs, asses. You're all worshipping bigger hogs and dogs and camels and asses. But you never worship Krishna, you demons. It's probably not the best way of attracting people. Oh, they're so intelligent. I'm a demon. Of course, Prabhupada did that one time. Many times he did that, actually. But Prabhupada had the authority, and he was also an elderly Indian gentleman, so it was a different mood. One Indian professor came and he was talking to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada asked him different questions about philosophy. And the man was, you know, more or less answering in that he was a Hindu professor. He didn't know what Hinduism meant. He asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada, you don't know what Hinduism is, and you're teaching Hinduism? Anyhow, Prabhupada started to call him a demon. You're a demon. And the man, Prabhupada said it so many times, he was an Indian gentleman, Prabhupada knew who he was talking to. He actually got down on the floor and paid dandavats before Prabhupada. And he kept on repeating, I'm a demon, I'm a demon. And Prabhupada got up and walked out. And the man was still on the floor, repeating, I'm a demon, I'm a demon. So obviously he was not a complete demon. I mean, he came from a culture where he gave respect to a sadhu. But Prabhupada, even to one professor from Ohio State, Prabhupada was saying, you know, Prabhupada was quite straightforward sometimes in preaching. But he knew what he was doing. And we ourselves may not be so, we don't have that position, we don't have the authority, we don't have the respect, nor do we have the knowledge of exactly when to be so straightforward. Therefore, generally, we don't start with, you know, there are two classes of people, the divine and the demoniac. And we're all divine, and you people out there, they're all demons. And Krishna comes to help the devotees, and he's going to destroy all of you, if you're lucky. Now, people will not understand it, and nor do we understand it. On the other hand, it is a fact that there is a difference. Krodha, what is it? Krodha, what's the first, next verse describing the demons, the first word? Krodha. The first, Dhamba, Dhambas, Bhimas, Cha, Krodha, Porusham, Eva, Cha, Agena, Vijatasya, Partha, Sampadam, Asarim. So then Krishna gets into it. He said that they're harsh, they're proud, they're angry, they're this and that. Krishna doesn't say, oh, they're nice people, they're just, you know, they just had a hard time in their childhood. Hug a demon. If you see a demon, hug him and he'll feel better. No, he says that they're dhamba, they're proud. Dhamba, 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 dhamba. No, dhamba, dhammas, to bhimas, cha. They're conceited, they're proud, they're angry, they're harsh. And then he gets into it even further. They're never clean. Pravritim cha, navritim cha, jana navide asura, nisocham napichachara, nisatyam tesha vijite. They're not clean, they're not truthful. They don't know what's to be done, what's not to be done. All he does is criticize them. And we read the Bhagavatam, and that's all Prabhupada is doing, is practically criticize everyone. Everyone's bad. Except for us, we're good. Sounds like what everyone else thinks. You're bad, you're bad. The women are bad, the men are bad. The homosexuals are bad. The gay people are heterosexual, they're bad. The black people are bad, the white people are bad. The green people are bad. The Americans are bad, the English are bad. The Germans are bad, everyone's bad. The earth people are bad, the people in heaven are bad. Everyone's bad. So who's good? We're good. But good from the point of view of what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that they're dedicating their energies in the service of Krishna. Therefore, they're doing something good for themselves and doing something good for others, because they're helping people revive their relationship with Krishna. They're trying to revive their relationship with Krishna, and that's good, because that will take us out of old age, disease, and death. And when we're not trying to do that, it's bad, because we're getting entangled in old age, disease, and death. And that's really bad. It's not a personal attack on people, because we're not this body. We're not black or white or green or Americans or whatever, or earth people or Martians, whatever. We're spiritual beings. And it's good for the soul to become liberated from his conception of identifying his body. In order to do that, one has to engage his energies in Krishna's service. So here, Prabhupada is saying that there's divine and demoniac, and there are people, perhaps there are no big demons nowadays like Hiranyaksha, who's digging up the Bhumandala for gold. Or there are other little demons. We have our little demons. And they're not written about in the Bhagavatam. But the same principles apply. They're simply trying to exploit the material nature. And of course we can criticize, and as a matter of fact, if you go on the internet, you'll find out that the big asuras nowadays were relatively insignificant. Are being criticized. But who are they being criticized by? By the little asuras. That these people, you know, and in the name of what? In the name of fairness. They're spying on us so they can exploit us. So what are they disturbed about? They're disturbed that they're taking away their ability to exploit others. They're not disturbed the fact that there are impediments or obstacles for liberation, taking away their Krishna consciousness, their ability to love Krishna. They're disturbed that their desire to exploit the material nature in various ways is being impeded by the bigger demons. So the little demons are criticizing the bigger demons rather than glorifying them. And we say, yeah, that's right. But we shouldn't identify ourselves with the little demons, just like hopefully we don't identify ourselves with the big demons either. If only I could become a big demon, then my life would be perfect. All the little demons would love me. No, they would all hate me too. We think, oh, if I became famous, if I became a movie star, everyone would love me. No, they hate the movie stars. That's why they have all these tabloids to find out how the movie stars are suffering. They're reporting on their divorce, their scandals, and people take pleasure. Yeah, he was big, but we dragged him down. They take pleasure when the big demons, because they're all demons. We don't read in these tabloids, oh, the big movie star started chanting Hare Krishna and he lived happily with his wife. How boring. Why did they put this in there? Okay. I don't want to hear that. So neither we should become attracted to becoming a big demon or a little demon. I'm not a big demon. I don't want to work so hard to become a big demon. I'm satisfied by being a little demon. I don't want to exploit everyone. I just want to exploit a few people. Therefore, we should actually examine ourselves and see whether or not, what is my tendency, and whether I can become more on the side of the suras and less on the side of the asuras. Because right now we were born, we were trained up very nicely to become demons, and somehow or another we failed. Or we didn't follow our training properly, although they tried sincerely to make us 100% good demons. But we blew from there. And now we really have to join the camp of the asuras and see what are those demonic tendencies for exploitation. Of course, none of us, even when we become suras, we're not going to fight against Hiranyakashipus or Hiranyakshas and then lift up the earth with our nose. We have no such power. Nor if we pray to Lord Bor, I drop my camera in the lake, can you please come and pick it up? Nor is Lord Bor going to come and pick up our devotional paraphernalia for us. But we can take shelter of the philosophy and understand if we take shelter of Krishna, at least he'll lift up our consciousness, which is probably as heavy as the earth. He'll lift us up out of the mire of the illusory energy, and that will be sufficient to save us. Krishna will save us in this age, especially by lifting us up through the Hare Krishna mantra. He doesn't have to come as Lord Bor and try to lift up the earth because it hasn't fallen yet again into the ocean. But our consciousness, that we have to lift up by taking shelter of Krishna and avoiding the sight of the demons who are more or less telling us to stay down, don't get too uppity. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
When I was a young devotee, I used to come, schools everyone, and the devotees often would say, "Oh, look at that guy, he's a real demon." And I used to wonder, how does he know he's a demon?
Oh, it's pretty good. You got, whoever you point out in the street, you got a pretty good chance of being somewhat of a demon. But what does that really mean? You know, Krishna divides everything up very simply between the divine and the demoniac. And of course, we always think we're the divine and the other people are the demons. Sometimes we even think I'm a devotee, and even the other devotees aren't really devotees. They're just pretending to be devotees. Even I saw it, like there's one purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that actually they're dressed as with tilak, and they have kunti mala, and they have japa beads, but actually they're lusting after other people's wives, so they're actually kali chelas. So then we think, yeah, that's right. That kind of fits the description of most of the devotees I know. Then we think, well, I'm the only devotee. So Krishna makes things simple because we're pretty simple and we don't have so much discrimination. But then there's further discrimination given in the Bhagavatam, and it becomes quite, in the Bhagavad Gita also, between people who are innocent, people who are born again, demons, people who are aspiring to become devotees, people who are actually devotees. There's quite a bit of discrimination. So we shouldn't be so quick in labeling everyone according to our limited conception of or discrimination, because that may interfere with our ability to actually serve everyone. One time Prabhupada was giving a lecture in Sweden, and he was describing about the divine and the demoniac. And he was also describing about the first class, second class, third class, and fourth class men. So one person in the audience, when he had a chance to ask a question, he said, "So, Swamiji, I imagine you think you're first class." And Prabhupada said, "No, I'm fifth class, because I'm a servant of all the other classes."
So we shouldn't be so quick to label everyone something, because actually we're servants of everyone. Of course, trying to come to the second class platform, a devotional service to purify ourselves, or to have Krishna purify us, then we have to have a certain amount of upeksha for those who are not interested in Krishna consciousness, which may vary according to our consciousness. And we have to try to serve the innocent by introducing in a practical way, in a palatable way, Krishna consciousness to the innocent people, of which practically 99.9% of the people are innocent. They may have been misled by their different factors into acting as if they're demons, but because if they're given the proper opportunity, a suitable opportunity, they'll naturally become attracted to Krishna consciousness. So to label them, arbitrarily label people too quickly without actually making an effort on our part to help the person be introduced to Krishna consciousness, and even if they're not immediately attracted by our effort, we should understand that our potency to introduce people may be rather lacking also, and that under other circumstances, with someone who has a little bit more understanding of Krishna consciousness and can approach the person in a little bit more attractive way, the person may become attracted. Therefore, in one sense, we should understand, we can give people labels, but don't take them so seriously that it interferes with our ability to actually serve everyone, because that's who we actually are. Everyone is actually Krishna's servant, and it's our mission to serve everyone the best we can. And even the people who are not interested, we serve them by neglecting them and trying to find people who are interested. And we don't try to agitate their minds. Yes.
Maharaj, Kansa also thought that he's a good man. He thought Kansa, he thought he's a good person.
Everyone, yeah, of course. If he thought I'm a bad person.
Even the demons think I'm a very good person. They may see Krishna or the devotees as bad people.
Yes.
It's just amazing phenomenon how everyone, even the mafia guys, they think I'm a good man because he wasn't bad.
Or if they think they're a bad person, they think they're a good person because they think they're bad. There's even, I heard that there's a Ramayana written from the point of view of that Ravana was actually a good person. But somehow or another, this tricky Kshatriya named Ramachandra came and he killed him. So Ravana is a good person, and Lord Ramachandra is kind of a tricky person. So, from a point of different people have a different point of view, obviously, and therefore there are different. For instance, there are Puranas in the mode of goodness, Puranas in the mode of passion, Puranas in the mode of ignorance, and they give different points of view. But ultimately, everyone loves themselves. Even this body, because it's connected with us, we love the body, although it's not us. But somehow or another, during this brief period of time, because it has some connection with ourselves, therefore we've fallen in love with it. And then we fall in love with other people who we think will glorify the body, because that will make us feel good, or serve our body. And we hate people who are obstacles for what we think is the goals of this body. So naturally, if you're a demon, then other people who are similar to you will become nice, and people who are different from you will be bad. Prabhupada said in the beginning they'll think we're crazy, they'll laugh at us. And then when they actually find out, well, not that we're not crazy, but we actually have some potency behind us, then they'll try to suppress us. And then at the end, Prabhupada said they'll love us. At least some people will love us. So I don't know what stage we're at now. But in any case, that's the nature. Is to change someone's consciousness is not so easy, because people naturally are attracted to people who have similar consciousness. And they think that's good and everything else is bad. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanande.